Welcome to another edition of the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Oast for Sun Sounds. I've got a story coming up this hour from True Romance Magazine. It's called My Boyfriend Likes Rough Sex. Here's the story. I was reaching up in the cabinet for some cereal that Saturday morning when Mom's eyes zeroed in on my injury. Too late, I knew I'd been foolish to wear my favorite t-shirt down to breakfast. "Renee, what's that on your arm?" "Nothing," I said, not too convincingly. She came over and pushed up the sleeve to reveal a large purplish bruise. I didn't notice," I lied. "I guess I must have bumped up against something." Mom scowled skeptically, hands on her hips. "It doesn't look like a bump to me. Did Connor do this?" "No, he did not," I protested emphatically. "I just bruise easily. Why do you always want to blame everything on Connor?" "Probably because she'd be right 9/10 of the time," boomed the voice of my father, who just entered the room. "Honestly, I don't know what you see in that jerk, Connor Fielding." "I only wish she'd see less of him," Mom chimed in. "Look at the way he treats you." I knew what my parents were talking about. Connor didn't exactly make a good impression. In fact, he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Little did my parents know that just the night before, I'd seriously asked myself the same question. Why did I stay with him? Connor had a knack for getting into trouble. He'd been arrested several times for disorderly conduct, which included fighting and drinking. Now, almost 20, he dropped out of high school in his senior year. Just to look at my lean, muscular rebel boyfriend in his black leather jacket and scuffed boots was enough for most people. The townspeople of Grandview, Arkansas, were ready to pronounce him guilty of crimes that hadn't even yet been committed. I'll admit, his devil-may-care demeanor didn't go far in helping to dispel local opinion, and neither did his lifestyle. He was always looking for adventure in dangerous hobbies like skydiving, drag racing, mountain climbing, and boxing. My parents would never forgive him for the time he gave me a black eye. It had happened a year earlier. For a while, the doctor worried about my eyesight. We'd been arguing about Connor studying for his high school equivalency exam, something he'd flatly refused to do. I called him dumb. I didn't mean to. It had just come out. I'd no sooner said it when I felt the sting of his open hand across my face. Sure, he'd struck me that one time, but I'd convinced myself it was unintentional. His action had been purely reflexive, an accident. He would never do it again. But I was wrong. The night before was proof of that. "That boy has got quite a temper, if you ask me," Chad said. "No one's asking you," I snapped. "We only want what's best for you," Mom said sweetly. "Why tangle yourself up with a character like him? Look around a little more. A pretty girl like you can find someone else." "Yeah, Connor's bad news," Dad said bluntly. "Marry him and you'll regret it for the rest of your life." What Mom and Dad didn't know was that I now agreed with them. Later that day, I planned on confronting Connor and calling off our engagement. We'd planned on getting married after I graduated from Central High the next year, but after he'd hurt me again, I wanted nothing more to do with him. I would have told my parents all that, except it would have only given them smug satisfaction by confirming they'd been right all along. I figured they'd find out soon enough. My arm ached with the soreness that was just beginning to set in. The night before, we'd been parked at our favorite spot on a country lane that ran by a rickety, weathered barn. There, we'd had our biggest fight. First, Cotter announced that he'd lost his job. "Again? What this time?" I asked in frustration. "Did you try to punch someone's lights out?" He tried to get over with his legendary bad boy grin. "How'd you guess?" I wasn't amused. "You didn't." He nodded. Rich had it coming. Rich Vaughn was a college student who worked with Connor at a custodial services firm. They cleaned a number of buildings in downtown Grandview. Connor claimed Rich had laughed at him. "Over what?" He admitted he didn't know. "So Rich laughed at you, and you hit him. That's about the size of it. He thinks he's better than me because he's going to college." I sighed in frustration. He could have been laughing about anything. No, he was laughing at me. "But you didn't really know, did you?" "No," he admitted. "Well, I hope it was worth your job," I said angrily. Like he'd flipped a switch, Connor leaned over to kiss me. I pulled away, no longer in the mood. "What are you going to do?" I asked. "About what? Your job. You're going to have to find another one if we plan to get married." He opened one of the cans of beer he'd brought along. I almost hadn't gone out with him because I could tell he'd been drinking all day. "I'll put word out at the pool hall that I'm back in the mechanic business again," he said. "The boys there will steer some business my way." "Yeah, the type of customers who don't want to pay," I said. Connor, despite his faults, had a reputation for being an excellent mechanic. The chance to work at a garage was what had lured him out of high school. He'd blown that good-paying job after he'd mixed it up with the owner's brothers one day. That altercation had earned him 2 months' worth of jail time. He tried to kiss me again, but I dodged his lips. "I want to go home," I announced. Laughing playfully, his arms encircled me, trapping me against the front seat. "Connor, don't," I objected. His lips met mine, but I didn't respond. As if that weren't enough, one of his hands touched my breast. "Please, Connor, take me home," I insisted. "No, let's talk." "I don't want to talk." He moaned pleasurably and tried to kiss me again, but again I resisted. I knew what he wanted. He was determined to sleep with me. Each night he'd been trying to break down my resistance, an effort fueled by our engagement. Since then, I'd found our parking sessions steamier, more intense, sometimes just plain frightening. I knew he was getting impatient. At times, I'd wondered how much longer I could hold out. Seeing he was getting nowhere, Connor pulled back. "You don't love me," he said childishly. "If you did, you wouldn't be so uptight about having sex with me." "If you loved me, you wouldn't try to force me," I countered, straightening my blouse. "Well, we're engaged. That's as good as being married in my book. It doesn't entitle you to the same privileges. Now, are you taking me home or not?" "No," he said, raising his voice. That's when I opened the car door. Like a bolt of lightning, Connor's hand shot out, grabbing my arm. His grip was vice-like, making me cry out at the sudden pain. Almost immediately, he let go, and I stumbled out. "An engagement doesn't mean sex?" "Doesn't mean sex," I shouted. "Here's what you can do with that." In the black of night, I twisted the engagement ring off and angrily tossed it onto the grass before stalking off. I must have walked a mile before He pulled up alongside me. He rolled down the passenger window. "Get in," he called out. "You can't walk back, especially not in those shoes." He was right. I still had on the dress sandals I'd worn at my summer job as a receptionist for one of Grandview's biggest insurance agencies. My feet ached, tears blinded my eyes, and I brushed them back as I reluctantly climbed in. I fumed in silence all the way home. Connor apologized profusely. Once in bed, I stared at the ceiling, knowing I had to not only break our engagement, but end my relationship with him. First, though, I wanted to find the ring. I'd been stupid to fling it away like that. I wouldn't feel right unless I gave it back. "What are you doing, or what are you going to do this morning?" Dad asked the next day. "I need to run some errands," I said. "Could I borrow the car for a while?" "Sure." He handed me the keys. "Just drive carefully." I kissed him and dashed outside. Once behind the wheel, I headed straight out to the spot where I'd thrown the ring. It was so quiet and peaceful in the countryside. Birds chirped in the morning stillness. The air smelled sweet. I looked fondly at the barn, almost stately against a cobalt sky. Sometimes when it rained, Connor and I would lie in the hayloft while the raindrops beat out their rhythm on the tin roof. Now we do no more of that. I must have combed the dewy grass for an hour before I finally spotted the diamond ring. I resisted the temptation to slide it back on my finger. No, I'd worn it too long already. This was the end. Still, I couldn't deny I loved Connor. I'd just come to the conclusion that living with him would be next to impossible. "It's over. I think it's best we go our separate ways." I rehearsed to the wind and field mice what I planned to say to Connor Fielding. Dating Connor was definitely a walk on the wild side. In many ways, we were complete opposites destined to clash. I was 15, a stringy-haired blonde who was just beginning to develop. I was also unbelievably shy, still asking my parents' permission for everything I did. I almost passed out when this handsomely roguish guy in a red 65 Mustang gave me a ride home from school one day. Connor Fielding not only drove a classic car he'd painstakingly restored, he did everything with class and a touch of danger. I'd have to say he embraced life to the fullest. To me, the car was a symbol of his spirit, an untamed horse. I guess it was his high-spiritedness that I found so appealing, that ready-for-anything spontaneity that kept me teetering on the edge. I nearly had a heart attack every time I watched him skydive. Another time I felt faint as I saw him driving a monster dragster he'd helped build. When he wasn't gambling with his life or toying with cars, Connor was in the basement of his mother's house, lifting weights. His physique was lean, powerful, the kind a girl can't help but admire. There's not a jar of peanut butter I can't open, he joked once while flexing his muscles. Connor, I'd quickly learned, had his bad side. He sometimes kept me waiting for hours. Once he didn't show up at all for a date. Afterwards, I learned he'd gotten so involved with a motor that he'd completely forgotten about me. "I've heard of playing second fiddle to another girl, but never a car," I'd said, lashing out. I didn't speak to him for 2 weeks that time, but I couldn't help not be forgiving when he sent me not one dozen red roses, but two. Connor was like that. He'd commit a wrong, then try to make up for it by overcompensating. People didn't mince words when they talked about him. Most were convinced he had a bad attitude. I learned why as I came to know and love a kinder, gentler side of Connor Fielding. One night, on one of our many moonlit walks down by the river, he told me about his upbringing. His father had died when he was two. He confided that his first male role model was an uncle who stayed drunk. Growing up, Connor spent a lot of time alone while his mother worked odd hours as a clerk in a convenience store. From the time he was 10, he ran two paper routes to supplement his mother's meager income. Mom latched onto men, thinking they would help her out, but they dragged her down more than anything, he said. Through the years, he saw a lot of men go through the house. None stayed. Considering the circumstances, I thought he'd turned out pretty well. Some may have thought Connor lacked sensitivity, but I knew different. I'll never forget the time we were strolling along the river one evening when we encountered an elaborate sandcastle. As excited as a kid, he got down on his knees to admire it. Tomorrow some little boys will come along and stomp it, he said sadly. What a shame. I could never smash it. It would be like stepping on a mermaid. I didn't know why, but his affection over something so simple as grains of sand molded into a castle made me blink back tears. Given the chance, I believed I could mold him into someone my parents would be proud of. On warm summer nights, we drive through the ritzy part of town just to admire all the lovely old homes. We loved those large two-story houses built in the 20s and 30s. A number of them were mansions. Someday, one of these will be ours, Connor would say. I'd shut my eyes, imagining myself sitting out on a particular screened porch or terrace and drinking lemonade. Sometimes I'd picture myself in the middle of a lovely kitchen, cooking something delicious for Connor. It was fun dreaming, yet I knew in my heart that the dream and the reality would never merge. With our low wages combined, we'd be lucky to rent a small apartment on the poor side of town. Do you know how much these cost? I asked him once. It doesn't matter, he said, shaking his head. I'll get whatever it takes. I'm going to treat you like a princess. I knew it could never happen, but I loved him all the same. He could barely take care of himself. How could he handle a wife and, hopefully, children? That night, I found Connor outside his mother's house, his head buried under the hood of his car. He glanced up. When he saw it was me, his face broke into a wide grin. I'm working up an appetite, he said, as if nothing had happened between us. How about us going somewhere in about an hour? I took the ring out of my purse and gently laid it on the car's fender. You can have this back, I said. Why? I can't wear that thing, he kidded. Connor, I meant what I said last night. You're not serious. Yes, I am. This just isn't working out. He reached out to me, but seeing that his hands were dirty, he dropped them in frustration. Don't make me beg, Renee. You know I love you. You love yourself and your car. You wouldn't lay a hand on your precious car. You don't think twice about putting dents in me. I peeled back my t-shirt to show him the bruise. I watched him wince. I didn't mean to do that. That doesn't make it hurt any less. I'm so sorry, Renee. I'm tired of being manhandled, I said, sighing. It's not just that, Connor. Oh, he says, I'm sorry, he repeated. It's not just that, Connor. I've been saving every dime I can get my hands on so we can make a good start. You do something stupid and lose your job. We'll have money when the time comes. That exasperated me. What are you, a magician? You've got to work to get money. You can't even hold on to a steady job. I'll find something, he promised. I looked him straight in the eye. Who are you trying to kid? You have no future. I realized I was repeating what my parents had said. It didn't feel good, but maybe the words would knock some sense into him. But I want to marry you, he insisted. Right, so you balk every time I want to look at apartments. He made a face. I want to get something really nice for you. Not any of those crummy places you want us to look at. I felt insulted and couldn't keep my anger in check any longer. You've got a lot of nerve to talk, still living with your mama. A wounded look slowly spread across his face. My job is just a temporary setback, Renee. Goodbye, I said sternly, turning to leave. Don't call me. Don't come by. I honestly never want to see you again. You can't leave me, he yelled as I walked away. I'm going to Alaska. I'm going to work on the pipelines. I'm going to make a lot of money. I'll show you. I kept walking. Before I shut the car door and drove off, I heard him shout, I'm not going to turn loose of you, Renee. Getting Connor off my mind was harder than I thought it would be. Twice he phoned. I hung up on him once. The second time, Dad answered, telling him he was no longer welcome and to leave me alone. Shortly after that, I got word that he'd mysteriously left town. I thought I wasn't going to recover until I met Tim Gallagher. Tim was unlike any guy I'd ever known. His most distinguishing characteristic were the small, wired-framed glasses he wore. Sporting a slight build, he was of medium height, only a little taller than me. He lived in Dalford, a larger community about 20 minutes away, studying to be a computer programmer. He'd landed a summer job with a computer repair firm. He'd come into the insurance agency to check out a computer we were having trouble with. Tim spent all day in the office. Before leaving, he asked me out. Mom and Dad took to this bookish, serious guy immediately, treating him like the son they never had. He treated me like a queen in the following months, taking me to places I'd never been. He knew all the great eating spots in his town and romantic places where we could dance all night. He introduced me to foreign films and the community theater. Compared to Connor, he was a real sophisticate. You're the most beautiful girl I've ever seen, Tim told me repeatedly, which I knew wasn't true. The important thing was that he found me beautiful. He confessed he had little experience with women, something I found enduring. But I still had trouble totally erasing Connor from my mind. While Tim was more romantic, I found myself sometimes craving Connor's rough, passionate kisses. Unlike with Connor, I never had to worry about fighting off Tim. With Tim, everything seemed so safe, so tame, so very predictable. Still, our relationship was wonderful. I was delighted when he proposed to me right before he left for college. We set the wedding date for late May, right after both of our graduations. My parents were ecstatic. They saw Tim as a real catch, a solid, caring man with a choice of jobs waiting for him. He and I faithfully wrote to each other several times a week. On holidays, he'd come to Grandview, or I'd drive up to the university where we always had a great time. Meanwhile, my parents planned a big wedding bash. They'd hired a caterer and a band. Relatives on both sides from all across the country planned to attend. As the end of school neared, gifts began pouring in. I was excited, but I kept having all these flashbacks of being with Connor. Forget the past, I told myself. Connor Fielding was a passing thing, about as desirable as a toothache. Then, why was I drawn to him like a moth toward a flame? I should have been thrilled that he was gone from my life. I don't know why I did it, but I sent a wedding invitation to Connor's mother, Opal. I'd always liked her. She'd had no expectations that I would marry her son. In fact, I think she felt sorry for me during the time while I was dating him. I didn't expect her to come, but I knew the invitation would mean a lot to her all the same. Two nights before the wedding, I heard a tapping on my window. Groggily, I got up to hear my name being whispered loudly. No mistake, it was Connor. Quickly, I pulled back the curtain. What are you doing here? I demanded. I told you I'd come back. I want to marry you. What time is it? I asked, wondering if this could be a dream. Mom called and told me you were getting married, he said. I am. Please, go away, I begged. I drove here as fast as I could. At least hear me out. I sighed deeply. This isn't exactly the greatest place to hold a conversation. He easily pushed open my window. Come on, Renee, let's go for a ride. As my eyes adjusted to the dimness, I saw a tired-looking young man in dirty clothes. His longish hair needed a trim. To me, he looked more handsome than ever. I'd been studying Shakespeare in school lately. Connor, standing outside my window, brought to mind Romeo courting Juliet. I don't know why, but his sudden appearance, his brash talk of marriage, it all struck me as terribly romantic. I can't truthfully say what compelled me to throw on some clothes and climb out into the night. Quietly, we hurried across the dewy lawn to where he'd parked. The sight of his shiny car stirred up familiar feelings deep inside me. Overcome with emotion, I got into the front seat. Sitting behind the wheel, Connor flipped on the dome light. Then he reached over to open the glove compartment and produced a thick roll of bills wrapped in a rubber band. It's ours, he said, dropping it in my lap. I've been saving it. I gasped. It looked like a fortune to me. It's $20,000, he said. I have lots more stashed away, too. Enough to make a good down payment on the house of your dreams. Where'd you get it? I told you I'd be back for you, he said, ignoring my question. Why didn't you write? I asked. You dropped off the face of the earth. I wanted to surprise you. Suddenly he looked offended. It looks like I got the surprise. I thought you'd wait for me. I found someone else, I said. I love you. You love me. What could be simpler? Under the interior light, his brown eyes gave him away. He was anxious about something, hyper even. I imagined him popping pills to stay awake while he drove. I remembered his classic temper and decided to tread gently across what could be fragile, emotional bedrock. I need some time to think, I answered. No, let's go now, Renee. You know it's me you really love. My head spun wildly while I pondered his words. What he was proposing was absolutely insane. People only ran off like this in the movies or in famous plays. This was real life, and in real life, I had a wonderful, dependable guy who wanted me to be his wife. With Tim, I had a bright future ahead. Now, this old boyfriend blew into town, expecting me to throw all that away for what could be a life of uncertainty. It was all laughable, except I wasn't laughing. I felt the old danger, and for some unexplained reason, it felt frighteningly good. Something stronger than logic was sucking me into its clutches. "Don't you love me?" he asked. That was the bottom line. Who did I love? If it was such a simple question, then why, when I searched my heart, was I unable to answer it? I found myself mentally going from one man to the next. I'd never been more confused in my life. I don't know, I said before asking. Where would we go? He shrugged. Where the road takes us, anywhere but here. I studied his handsome profile, his muscular arms. Physically, Tim was no match for Connor, yet intellectually, Connor was a featherweight compared to Tim. I'm going to leave my parents a note, I heard myself say. My words were another voice in the car, a stranger speaking. No, you can't do that. If I don't, they'll think something terrible happened to me. They'll go to the police. The moment I said police, he nodded. Maybe you're right. Just tell them you and I eloped and say you'll be in touch. He removed his insurance papers from an envelope and handed it to me along with a pen. I wrote the note, then ran up to our front door and dropped it through the mail slot in the front door. It was almost an out-of-body experience to watch him start the car, feeling the sensation as it pulled away from the curb and glancing behind me to see my house getting smaller and smaller until it was completely disappeared. I can't believe I'm doing this, I thought. It was like my brain had become disengaged from the rest of me. I could never undo what I was about to do. At any point, I knew I could tell Connor to stop. That's all it would have taken. I could get out and walk back or call my parents. I held the power. Instead, I stared through the bug-splattered windshield in silence, wondering what kind of person I really was. Connor drove fast, the little car gobbling up the miles on the interstate. We spoke little, which was fine by me. I was still trying to come to grips with my decision and the chain of events that would follow. I thought of the shock that would be reverberating through my house within a few hours, of my mother's tears of disappointment and my father's rage. Then there was poor Tim. How would he take the news? He'd done nothing to deserve this kind of treatment. Overnight, he would find his dream girl had turned into a wicked witch. It was all my fault, yet he would be the only one around to bear the brunt of shame. If I knew Tim, he would be blaming himself. And Connor, was the man beside me crazy about me or just plain crazy? He seemed preoccupied with his driving. I noticed he kept glancing in his rearview mirror as if he were watching for someone. I thought of the wad of money in the glove compartment. Why was he carrying it there? Why didn't he put it in a bank? Above all, I wondered what he'd done to earn such a big sum so quickly. Let's stop here, he said, driving toward a small motel on the Arkansas-Oklahoma border. I wanted to object, but I was starting to tire. We can get married tomorrow. He studied my face for a reaction. Didn't he understand there was a certain order to things? Maybe it was just a small thing to him, but it mattered a lot to me. I wanted to get married before I had sex. Still, I was too tired to protest. I thought of the cozy cabin Tim had reserved for us in Eureka Springs. We'd pored over brochures to pick just the right place for our honeymoon. It had a balcony with a spectacular view of the Ozarks, a hot tub and lots of trees for privacy. Not far away was a cafe that served huckleberry pancakes for breakfast and a restaurant that specialized in seafood for dinner. Everything was going to be perfect on our honeymoon. Suddenly, everything seemed all out of sorts. "I'm going to buy you that house you always wanted," Connor said for the third time, as if that would change everything. Making love to Connor wasn't what I'd always imagined. He seemed disconnected, absorbed in something else. I wasn't any better. I felt scared, nervous. I blamed it on the long drive, the stress of our sudden decision, our unromantic surroundings. "Things can only get better," I kept trying to reassure myself. I woke up early, restless. I'd slept fitfully during the night. Connor, laying in the twisted covers like a toppled Greek statue, snored soundly. Quietly, I dressed and took an early morning walk. The area around the motel was seedy, the streets strewn with litter. I found a tiny cafe 4 blocks away and took refuge in it. In a booth, I drank cup after cup of strong coffee, hoping the caffeine would make me more alert. In the cold light of day, nothing made any more sense than it had the night before. If anything, our actions seemed even more bizarre. I was taken by an impulse to phone home. Mom was an early riser. She'd no doubt read my note by now. I wanted to hear her voice. Suddenly, I felt like a little girl, not a woman ready for marriage. I found a public phone near the restrooms. Nervously, I dialed the operator and had her place the collect call to my house. Mom answered on the first ring. "Yes, I'll accept the charges," she said breathlessly. Tearfully, I told her what we'd done and where we'd spent the night. "Are you all right?" she asked. "Yes," I said hesitantly, "but I..." "Oh, Mama, I'm just so mixed up. Renee, what's done is done, but you must come home." "I can't, Mom, not after..." "Listen to me, honey. Connor is wanted by the police. Did you know that?" "No." Suddenly, I thought of the wad of money in Connor's pants pocket. Somehow, I knew that was coming, or what was coming next. "He's accused of embezzling from his employer," she said. She went on to tell me that the police had already spoken with Connor's mother. "He told his mother about his plans to elope with you," Mom said. "At the time, his mother had no idea of the trouble he was in. The police woke us up about 3 a.m, and then I found your note." I stood there in silence, the phone pressed tightly against my ear. "Renee? Renee!" Mom called me. I don't know why, but I hung up. Feeling like a zombie, I didn't bother to count my change as I paid the check. Only vaguely did I recall walking back to the motel. When I got home, Connor was dressed and furious. I no sooner opened the door when he grabbed me and shoved me up against the wall. "Where in the hell did you go?" he demanded. With his mussed hair and wild burning eyes, he looked like a madman. "For coffee," I said meekly. "Don't you ever leave like that without telling me," he said sternly. I felt my anger rise along with my courage. "You embezzled that money, didn't you?" He glared at me. "How did you know?" "I called home. I told him all about my conversation with Mom." He drew back his hand as if he were about to hit me, then dropped it. "Tell me about the money," I insisted. Reluctantly, he told me he'd worked for a store that sold discount auto parts in Iowa. The company had a liberal policy on refunds. He'd made out refunds to fictitious people pocketing the cash. He'd also admitted stealing expensive parts from the warehouse and selling them on the black market. Over time, he'd amassed nearly $40,000. "We've got to get out of here," he said. I stood firm. "I'm not going. I won't marry a thief." He grabbed my arm and pulled me toward the door, roaring, "You'll do what I say." I struggled, but he was unbelievably strong. He wrenched my arm behind me, twisting it until I cried out in pain. "We'll go to South America," he said. "We'll like it down there. The living is cheap. I can get a job on an offshore oil rig." I realized fighting him would be futile. I offered no resistance as he led me out to the car. Leaving town, we were stopped at a light when I noticed the police car coming toward us. Before the light could change, I threw open the door and jumped out. "Hey!" I heard Connor yell. I ran toward the black and white cruiser, waving wildly my arms. Behind me, I heard the squeal of tires as Connor took off. The officer soon pulled up beside me. Hurriedly, I told him that Connor was wanted in Arkansas. With rapid fire speed, the policeman began talking on his radio. Afterwards, he continued to question me while sirens screamed in the distance. "Let's take a trip down to the station," he said finally. "Am I under arrest, officer?" I asked. He laughed. "No, I just want you there until your boyfriend's in custody and we can straighten things out." "He's not my boyfriend," I said, "at least not anymore." The cop only shook his head and laughed some more. They brought Connor in an hour later. His shirt was bloodied and he was crying like a baby. I took a step forward, but the cop I rode down with stopped me. What did they do to him?" I demanded. "It's what he did to his car," the cop said. "They were in the process of setting up a roadblock outside of town. He tried to go around it and wasn't successful." "You mean he crashed his car into one of ours? I've never seen a man so upset over wrecking his car." "That car was all he had," I told them. "Well, he doesn't have that now. It's totaled." I thought of all the good times we'd had in that car, and I felt Connor's loss. He would recover from his physical wounds, but he'd never forget about losing his car. "What you did was admirable," the cop said to me after Connor was booked and jailed. I nodded, feeling sick to my stomach. For doing the right thing, I sure felt lousy. I called my parents and told them I'd be taking a bus home. "Your daddy and I raised you right. We figured you'd come to your senses," Mom said. She informed me that she hadn't told Tim anything. I suddenly realized I couldn't return to town without him, even knowing what had transpired during the past few hours. Who was I kidding, though? To hide something like this from Tim would be wrong. You can't start off a marriage right by holding things back. I knew I had to tell him everything, including the detail that I'd slept with Connor. I hoped he would forgive me, but I realized that could be asking too much. The bus stopped in a lot of drab little towns along the way. I didn't mind the monotony, though. I wouldn't have cared if it had taken me a week to reach Grandview. It only gave me more time to reflect on the biggest mistake of my life. As the distance narrowed, I was more and more prepared to accept responsibility for my stupidity. In less than a day, I felt like I'd done a heck of a lot of growing up. Time was going to have to help me do it. Oh, you know what? That's the end of the story. Time was going to have to help me do it. Okay, so that is the end of the story. And if you tuned in late, this is the Romance Program with volunteer Jeannie Oost for Sun Sounds. I've got a short story coming up. It's like a feature in True Romance magazine. This is called Passages, Rainy Day in the Attic, written by Olga Vallehart. Here's the story. I love to browse the aisles in Hallmark stores that display those beautiful selections of diaries or journals. I touch them, open them, marveling at the romantic covers with colleagues of antique photos of beautiful ladies wearing velvet hats and ruffled ruffled dresses. Other covers are comical, featuring Dr. Seuss characters or Charlie Chaplin. Then there are the sexy versions with Marilyn Monroe, Madonna, or more recently, Britney Spears, which you can tell this is an old magazine. I buy different kinds depending on my moods. My obsession with diaries began when I was still a child of about 9 years old. I was upstairs in our attic with my mother, who was trying to get rid of some of the clutter. As she opened an old mirrored armoire, she pulled out a faded pink hat box. Inside were several yellowed notepads, which she began to read silently. I was digging around the room, pulling out old dolls and toys when I glanced at her. Through the tiny attic window, I could see rain falling. The room was dim, so she lit an old kerosene lamp that made her face glow. As she smiled, she looked like Our Lady of Guadalupe in one of my religious stamps, so wistful and beautiful. I liked being alone with my mother, even for a few moments. Her presence brought me a soothing peace. When I asked her if she was reading a story, she replied, "No, dear, I'm reading about the day I met your daddy." Then she straightened her apron and asked, "Would you like to hear what I wrote about that day?" There was no doubt that I wanted to hear about that special day in her life. She began to read her own words in a very soft and gentle manner. That was my introduction to the wonderful world of writing about your own experiences. I was instantly caught up in the romance of my parents' first romantic meeting outside the Rialto Theater in Old Laredo, Texas. My mother's diary wasn't fancy or frilly like the ones you see today. It was just a simple notepad with a beige cover that seemed more appropriate for lists or business matters. But she allowed me to read about her adventures and the simple everyday happenings that were important enough for her to record as a young lady. What a delightful rainy afternoon we spent reading her diary, which chronicled an age of innocence that has somehow been lost. When Christmas came along that year, I asked for a diary of my own. No one was happier than me that cold December morning when I unwrapped a lovely lavender diary with my name engraved in gold. It was one of those five-year diaries, the ones with the tiny gold keys. Maybe I would never write like Louisa May Alcott, but no one could stop me from recording my thoughts, fears, joys, and sorrows in my very own style. To this day, I keep several diaries, one for my everyday thoughts, another for my dreams and nightmares, and another for my travel writings. I like my obsession. It's therapeutic, and it has been a great source to gather topics for poetry, which is another form of writing that I enjoy. I anticipate that my love affair with journals will continue for as long as I can write. And I will always be thankful to my mother for introducing me to this passion. Although she died shortly after her 88th birthday this year, I sometimes smell her scent of gardenias, a scent which is always followed by feelings of peace and love. I sit in quiet solitude, remembering our times together. Many beautiful experiences in my life might have faded like the wick of a candle, but instead I'm able to relive those times, including those precious moments I shared with the lady who started it all. Okay, so I still have a few minutes, so I'm going to finish this romance show with a poem. This was written by Cynthia Dees from Alabama. It's called For My Precious One. Here's the poem. Although you are miles away, we are still close. You are in my thoughts every day, in my heart and soul always. When we are apart, we are not really apart at all, because our minds and spirits are joined forever. We shall weather the trials of life and the pain and sadness together. Until we meet again, I shall continue to punctuate my every sentence with a kiss, and I will continue to think of you with tender thoughts and gaze at your picture every night before sleep. Soon these aching, lonesome nights will be forever banished, and we will happily share the love and desire we were always meant to, but were denied by a fate more cruel than death itself. Think of me often, my love, as I will you. Okay, here's another poem to finish this show. It's from True Romance Magazine, written by Pearl Hoffman. It's called Love is a Many Splintered Thing. Here's the poem. He told her that he loved her, and he counted all the ways. He gave her gifts and flowers on all the important days. He brought her special delicacies from a chocolatier 20 miles out because she said she liked them and that's what love's about. He listened to her intently. Each word was like a jewel. He knew how to start her fire and when to add more fuel. There was one matter that he chose simply not to mention. Why let his being married become an issue of contention? Okay, well, my show's a little short, but that's going to have to do it for this edition of the Romance Program. As always, thank you so much for listening. I've enjoyed so much reading to you, reading my stories and poems, and I will be back next week. This has been Volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. Have a great week and take care. I will talk to you later. Bye-bye.